What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Hindsightless, the sporadic podcast where I talk about life, role-playing games, or whatever else might be running around inside of my head. But mostly role-playing games, except for this one, because the universe has decreed that I no longer get to play. Is this thing on? Is this how this works? It's been a couple weeks. It's been like 2 weeks almost exactly, so I think this is how it goes, but I haven't played any games, so there's that. I should have played in 3 games, but they all got canceled because good times. So I haven't had a whole lot to say, but today I think I do have a whole nother Boromir episode coming out soon. I got a bunch of Boromir calls that we'll get into, but this isn't going to be that. Today, I'm going to talk about a series of books I've been reading, which you probably know what I'm going to talk about, a movie that I saw, and some videos that I've been watching. So yeah, it's sort of a media mashup, roundup, hoedown, throwdown, and yeah, that's what we're going to talk about. So with the call from Jason, let's get into the book talk. So, Jason, start us off, dude.
Hey, man, how you doing? I didn't totally focus on all of your last episode when I listened to it a couple days ago because, you know, I've been sick. But I'm to the point where I can kind of talk without coughing, but I can't re-listen to your episode now because we might be able to hear noise in the background from the construction. Anyway, what I was going to say is I'm not going to try to touch on any of the important stuff you talked about because I don't know I was lucid enough to totally grasp it. But I will mention you talked about this Dragonette series and you got the humans running around in their animal skins and stuff. You know, it sounds like a lot like a Planet of the Apes kind of game. I know you're not into Planet of the Apes, but, you know, it sounds like Planet of the Apes, but with dragons instead of apes. So, you know, maybe you are into Planet of the Apes and you don't know it.
Yeah, I could see the Planet of the Apes vibe a little bit. I think the power discrepancy between these dragons, these huge dragons and the little humans, is more intense than the gorillas and the humans. But it definitely, I mean, this series of books, which, by the way, I'm talking about, as Jason mentioned, the Wings of Fire series. I just finished the 9th book in the series. The author, again, is Tui, T-U-I, Tui Sutherland, Tui T. Sutherland. And so, yeah, it like, basically, Jason mentioned it. So, in this world, the world is called, I'm pretty sure, Pyrea. You get hints of it throughout the series. Humans used to be far more prevalent than something called the Scorching happened, which I am sure we will learn about as I continue down the road. There are currently 15 books out, plus I believe 5 graphic novels, which I don't think I'll get to those. But anyway, so yeah, there was a thing called the Scorching in which most humans were wiped off the face of the planet and dragons, boom, took over. It's sort of the reverse of a lot of fantasy worlds for RPGs that you hear about, where there was an era where dragons ruled and then the dragons had a downfall. Now there's only a few dragons and a bunch of humans. This is the opposite of that, which I think is fun. and we still, through a total of nine books, we only get bare glimpses of humans. No human has a speaking line that we can understand, or that the dragons can understand. And I just think that's cool. Now, granted, I do think the author sometimes forgets that these are dragons and not humans with hands and legs and stuff, because some scenes you're like, so how is the dragon, how is this four-legged dragon, like, holding this sword and doing this and doing that and all these things? You're like, oh, it doesn't matter. If you think, right, they're YA books. So they are written for a younger audience. And if you wanted to, you could break it down really hard and be like, that doesn't make sense. But they're fun as hell. I really like them. And the thing that I like most now in the last two books, mostly in books 8 and 9, more so than in the other books, we get into the magic of the world. They're called dragons that can cast spells are called animus dragons. And I mean, there's going to be some lore spoilers for the series. So if you're planning on reading the series, no story spoilers, but lore spoilers, skip ahead till some other part. Anyway, so dragons that can cast spells are called animus dragons. They can come from any of the, I think there's basically like five tribes. Maybe we'll meet more, but there's the sea tribe, the night wings, the ice wings, the sand wings, the mud wings, and the rain wings. Those are the different types of dragons that we've met so far. And animus dragons can appear in any one of those clans, basically, species of dragons. And yeah, so when they do happen, it's a big deal. We haven't seen any in the world for a long time. And it's also said that their magic only works on inanimate objects. Well, that might not be so true, but the thing about the magic is how the magic works. I don't know that many systems. From what I understand, maybe Ars Magica does magic this way. There are some games out there that have very, very free form magic systems, from what I understand, where you like combine words and phrases and stuff. This is the magic system in Wings of Fire is kind, you can do anything. You can do anything you want. You just have to say what it is. So for instance, you could enchant a sword to, you could tell this sword, sword, I enchant you to go out and kill every firstborn son for the next 5 years. And this sword would then do that. And it can't be unenchanted. You could enchant something beforehand to make it unenchantable, but once something is enchanted, at least as of now, what I've seen now in this series, you can't unenchant it. And so it's this really awesome, crazy magic system. At the end of the ninth book, there is a magical battle, which is awesome. Where you're just like, yeah, this magic system is friggin' amazing. Like, as soon as you're born, you're a friggin' ninth level spellcaster, right? Like, you can cast ninth level spells. You're a 20th level wizard, basically. As soon as you get power, there's no, you study and you learn and all this. If you have the power, you have the power, and the power is everything. It's super, super, super powerful. You can enchant people to become magical and enchant a magic person to no longer be magical. Like, it's crazy, right? The magic system is buck wild and it's fun. It's just fun to see how they work it. And, you know, like I've said before, each book sort of focuses in on one main character. There's not a whole lot of point of view shifts in these novels. And that would be my one small complaint. It would be nice if there was a little more. For me, I like books that hop around between perspectives. And these don't really, there's a little in there for sure. But pretty much each book focuses in on one specific dragon. in their story and what's going on. And all the stories interlink and they intermingle, you know. So in one book, they'll touch on stuff that happened in other books, but from the main character's point of view. So, you know, it's cool, but I would like a little more. But anyway. And so, where was I going with that? I don't even remember anymore. But yeah, the magic system is just, it's cool. It's really, really cool. What else do I want to say about the series? If you do read the series, I would not read the synopsis for book 8 or 9, especially for book 8, because 8 sort of sets up a new kind of story arc and totally blows. Like, if you care about spoilers or mysteries in the story, or, you know, is it good or is it bad kind of questions that you want to argue with in your mind as you read, don't read the synopsis, because it's just like, oh, okay. So that answers that major fucking question. But if you don't care about that stuff, like I don't, go ahead and read it. Because I mean, I think the answer is pretty obvious. I don't think there's a big mystery there, but the synopsis does ruin the mystery, what little of it there is. But yeah, anyway. Super fun series. I was lucky enough to be invited to the birthday dinner of the now 10-year-old who introduced me to this series. And there were a bunch of people there, and she was getting a ton of presents. So, you know, we didn't. I gave her, as I mentioned, basically like this spiral bound, full color, sort of like almanac of the world of Pyrea that they sold on Amazon. It goes into each dragon and there's cool art in it and everything, which she really, really liked. And we did manage to have a short but awesome conversation about the books as everybody was leaving. 'Cause like I said, there was a bunch of people, so she was busy talking to a bunch of people, but we had an awesome conversation about who our favorite dragons are. And I was pleased to hear we share the same probably top favorite dragon, which is Glory. Queen Glory, she is fucking awesome. Glory is just like a total boss. She fucking rules. Kinkajou is also awesome. Moon Watcher. She mostly goes by Moon. I think it's Moon Watcher. Moon Watcher is pretty badass. Turtle. Turtle's a little too insecure for me. Clay is awesome. He's a total badass boss dragon. Yeah, just a fun series, great characters, cool adventures. They go on awesome, fun adventures that have stakes. Dragons die in this, like people get maimed in battles, which affects them later on in books. People suffer the ill effects of having to kill or seeing people killed later on in books. So things that happen matter in the stories, which, you know, that's awesome. You don't want to just have a whole series where things happen, but they have no effect down the line, because then they just sort of feel like disconnected. Like there are through lines that go through the entire series, and they're really well crafted. I got to give Tui props, Tui T. Sutherland props, because she did an awesome job. And they're fun. So they're really quick reads on Audible at 1.25 times, which is sort of my sweet spot for listening to audiobooks, because it speeds it up, but it doesn't speed it up so fast where it changes the pitch of the narrator's voice all that much. Faster than that changes the pitch of their voice and how they sort of read, how you hear it. So 1.25 times on audiobook, they're 6 hours or less, pretty much all of them. So you can, if you got a lot of free time like I do, you can burn through these things like I did, right? I have 6 free hours after work a day, most days. Is that sad? No, it's not fucking sad. Anyway, Those are the books that I wanted to talk about. The Wings of Fire series. Like I said, I just finished the ninth book, which is Talons of Power. Peril is another awesome dragon. Some dragons in the world have special powers. Like I said, some become magical dragons. This one particular Skywing, which I forgot about earlier. Skywings are basically red dragons, from what I understand. They're the fastest. They breathe fire. They're usually red or orange or gold. So they're basically like the red dragons of the world. Nightwings are like the black dragons, except they also breathe fire, but some of them have like psychic mind powers. some of them. Mudwings are really strong and kind of brown and live in swamps and stuff. They can breathe fire, but only if they get hot enough. And some of them are born with fireproof scale, fire resistance. So you still get burned to shit, but you basically heal instantaneously, but you feel the pain of the burn, which that's a oh, man, that's a rough gift. What rain wings? They have super ultimate camouflage. They can basically turn invisible with their camouflage is that good. They can basically become invisible, and they have this crazy deadly acid venom that they spit out of their fangs like a snake would, that just can melt flesh and everything. So people fear them, but they're generally considered like these super hippies that just live in the rainforest and just sleep in the sun all day and eat fruit and are super lazy and don't bother anybody. That's what everybody thinks of the Rain Wing. But Queen Glory is a rain wing. Anyway, so yeah, there's this one Skywing named Peril, and she's got this power where if she touches any other dragon, they instantly catch on crazy fire and burn to ash in like seconds. If she touches anything, it instantly catches into superheated fire that burns away. So kind of like Rogue from the X-Men in a sense, where you can't touch Rogue. Because she'll suck away all your powers and you'll go unconscious and it totally sucks. This poor dragon, she can't be touched, she can't be held. She was raised by this crazy psychopathic queen who loved to murder other dragons and use Peril as her champion to murder all these other dragons and stuff. So she's all messed up, dude. And the stories do a really good job of going into that. Obviously, again, these are YA books, so they're not breaking down hugely deep diving into the psychology of post-traumatic stress disorder and what it would be like to be forced to murder people. But the Tui Sutherland does touch on these topics in a way where you can feel it. You feel that Peril is messed up and knows it and is sad about it and doesn't want to kill, but that's all she knows. And it, oh man, they're heavy books. They deal with some heavy ass themes like war, refugees, migration, all this stuff they deal with, like being taken out of your home and having to live somewhere else. 'Cause the author, it sounds like she moved around a lot. I got the feeling from listening to her interview, maybe I said this before, that maybe she was a military brat, like maybe her parents were in the military and so they moved around a lot, because it sounds like she's lived in a bunch of countries, an American who has lived in a bunch of countries growing up, probably was military related. That's an assumption. I don't know that for sure. It's possible, but anyway, yeah, read them. They're fun. I have not been reading Lord of the Rings lately. I need to get back into that. But that's a story for another day. So that is the books that I wanted to talk about. Thank you for that call, Jason. I know I went way off course, but anyway, thank you. So now let's get into the movie that I just saw. Okay, so it's Saturday as I record this. On Thursday, I took the day off work and went and saw Dune. So I've seen Dune Part 2 now. I saw it in the theater, the same theater in which I saw Dune Part 1 and also the D&D movie. I've been going to this theater basically since I moved to Seattle over 20 years ago, it's been there the whole time. It has barely changed. I love it to pieces. And just how many things are still around that you've been going to for that long? There were long stretches of time, like decade, like 10 years when I was living up north in Seattle, where I did not go to this theater, right? I went to a different theater that I live near. But it's so nice to be back at this one. It feels like home. It's just super comfortable, super low key. They only have two screens, one on the ground floor, and then one you got to go up two flights of stairs to go to that one. It's just an awesome little theater. And yeah, Dune Part Two. So my first thing I'll say is it's a bummer that the pandemic late delayed this movie so hard. I feel like if you haven't read the books and you haven't seen the first movie in a long time, it could be challenging for folks. Though I've seen reports that the movie has made a ton of money, 81 million domestically and over like almost 150 million worldwide. You know, it's not going to do $1 billion like Barbie, but or Oppenheimer. But still, it's doing pretty well for itself. I feel like making some money. Anyway, you might struggle with it because it does not, the movie does not really give you a recap of what happened in part one. It just goes into part two, which had the movie just come out, had part one just come out a year ago or a year and a half ago, like was supposed to happen, would have been probably fine. But it's been 3 years now, basically, between the movies. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I enjoyed the movie. It's slow. There are exciting parts, obviously, but there are some slow parts for sure. There is a lot of subtitles. A lot of subtitle. Like 30% of the movie, 40% of the movie, probably less than half, but not by much. So that was kind of a bummer. Granted, I've read Dune a billion times and seen the Lynch movie a billion times, so I know what's going on for the most part, and I speak enough Fremen to pick up what they're talking about, Moadib and Shai Hulud and all that stuff. But yeah, there is a ton of subtitles. And then there's laughter like during the subtitles, and it's like, I missed that. That was probably a funny joke. I don't know what that joke was. Like Stilgar has a is sort of like, he's not comic relief, that's the wrong word, but he does provide some levity to the movie in a couple scenes, very dry levity, but levity nonetheless. And it's like, okay, that's interesting. It's been a minute since I've read the book, so I can't say how much they changed. I don't feel like they changed too much. I wasn't thrilled with the portrayal of Jessica, Paul's mother, in part two. There's a time where she throws up, and that annoyed the shit out of me. Because if you know anything about Bene Gesserit, that would never happen. A Bene Gesserit would never throw up unexpectedly. They have complete and ultimate control over their body. They can, if they get pregnant, they get to pick whether it's going to be a boy or a girl or whatever. They have that much control. If you get poisoned, you can say, I'm not poisoned anymore. Get out of here. Poison, get out of my body. And it goes away. So the fact that they show Jessica throwing up from like morning sickness at one point, it's like that I hate that. But that was the only part of the movie that I hated. Other than that, I liked the movie. I just like these movies. I think they're cool. I hope they make another one. This movie, part two, wraps up the story of the first book. So it's not, they don't leave you hanging as far as the book goes. Now, if you've read the book, you know that the book ends And you're like, well, what happens next? So this movie ends like that as well. But as far as the first book goes, the story is done. We'll see what they do if they come out with Dune Messiah. Yeah, I don't know whether they're gonna or not. But I enjoyed the movie. I'll probably watch it again when it comes out on HBO Max or whatever it comes out on. But yeah, if you're, it's 2 hours and 45 minutes. It felt like it. I had to pee partway through. I waited an hour and 45. I waited over half of the movie, so good for me. I didn't miss much because I know what happens. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I'm glad I saw it. I'm even more glad that it got made. I like when a movie, when an adaptation tries. You know, and they try to stay true to the themes and the ideas and ideals of the original material, as opposed to something like Wheel of Time, where they just completely mixed everything up and got everything wrong and reversed stuff. So it felt like something that was trying to be Wheel of Time but wasn't. This feels like Dune. There are some slight changes in things, but for the most part, it stays true to Dune. And I think the actors all do a fine job. That Chalamet kid is pretty cool as Paul Muad'Dib. He's not, what's his name? Paul from the Lynch movie, Patrick McGuffin. God damn it. Anyway, you know who I'm talking about. That dude is forever Paul Atreides in my mind. This Chalamet kid does a pretty solid job. He does a pretty good job. The girl they have playing Chaney does a good job. I wasn't a big fan of the princess, the emperor's daughter. I didn't really like her much. But yeah, on a scale of like 1 to 10, it's 8, 7.58, I'd say. Damn, it's raining really hard right now. Anyway, Dune, fun, long, sometimes slow movie with amazing sound. The sound of that movie. There were times where I could close my eyes and follow the story because of the sound. It was fantastic. The guy who played Fade is okay. He's okay. Does a pretty good job. He's not Sting. Does a pretty good job, though. Yeah, anyway, that's my rambling review of Dune Part 2. Now, let's talk about some videos I've been watching. So, when I'm not reading Wings of Fire or going to see Dune or playing games, because I'm not playing in any games anymore. That's not a thing I do anymore, apparently. Though I do have a game of After the Bomb coming up this weekend at time of recording, and that's going to be awesome. But anyway, when I'm not doing any of that thing, I like to watch stuff on YouTube, and I recently found this channel called CBS Radio Mystery Theater. And what they do is they upload these these friggin' mystery theater radio shows, but they're not like the cool old ones like Ray has talked about on his show before. Ray Otis has talked about how he got really into these sort of radio shows from like the 40s and stuff. These are all from like the mid to late 70s. And I didn't know that they were still doing like radio theater shows in the mid 70s, but apparently they are, because I'm looking at the details of when these shows were first put together, and they're all 76, 77, 78. I'm like, God damn, man. Who knew? Not me. And the producer, the original producer for most of these shows so far back in the 70s, his name was Hyman Brown. And I can't hear that name without laughing because I am a child. But anyway, they're really fun. Each one is about half an hour, 45 minutes long. They're like self-contained little scenarios. They feel very Call of Cthulhu because they're mysteries, But each one has, maybe there's a supernatural aspect. One I listened to the other day was about this professor, this married professor who was doing a translation of Beowulf and getting really into Beowulf and having all these crazy dreams. And his wife, and his best friend, who was a psychiatrist, were very worried about him. And then these crazy, super grisly murders started happening. And you don't know if the husband is like having these fugue states where he's going out and murdering people or what. And then at the end, you find out that it wasn't the husband after all. But who was it? I won't say, because maybe you'll listen to it and it's a fun twist. Anyway, they're like these fun little Call of Cthulhu scenario. You could totally run most of them as little Call of Cthulhu one shots. And I just think they're fun. It's a nice little kind of just way to just kind of get a blast from the past, because they very much feel like they're from the 1940s. The recordings are kind of warbly. The acting is, it ain't great, but it's fun. And they're just these radio plays, but they're fantastic, man. So you could check it out, CBS Radio Theater on YouTube, or I believe somewhere on Ray Otis's website or on Plundergrounds, he talks about it somewhere. He put together like a whole list of these cool radio shows that you could listen to on the internet from like the 40s. So if you wanted to go back to the roots, you could listen to that, or these from the mid to late 70s, where they have sponsors from like True Value Hardware Store and like different cold medicines that are still on the shelves today. Yeah, so there's that, man. CBS Radio Theater, get some ideas for some really sweet, low Cthulhu, Call of Cthulhu scenarios. Like, each of these mysteries, maybe there's supernatural something happening, but maybe there isn't. And that's kind of fun, right? Because you don't really know. You leave that up to the keeper and the people playing the game or whatever. Great idea to find some Call of Cthulhu adventures. Anyway, that's it. I'm gonna get out of here. CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Well, damn, this turned into a way longer episode than what I was thinking. I thought this would be a short one, but it's almost like a half an hour long. Anyway, oh well, that's the way things go. Thank you for that call, Jason. It's nice to be back on the mic again after a little 2 week break. Get an episode out. And yeah, I do have a Boromir episode all lined up with calls from, who's on there? I don't even remember at this point. But that'll be fun. So if you have, it's been 2 weeks, but if you have anything else to say about Boromir, send it in. Yeah, I really got to get back. I got to get back on the back in the book club. I missed last week's readings, and I haven't read this week's readings for the Tolkien Read Along Book Club. And I really need to. There is one thing. So we've started reading Fellowship of the Rings out of order, in an order that everybody thinks flows better. They're chunked together. Our readings are now chunked together by events that happen more or less in chronological order, instead of how Tolkien has them, where they're just sort of intermixed together. But yeah, so that's kind of thrown me off a little bit. I sort of feel I'm the only one, so I haven't said anything in the book club. But yeah, everybody else seems to really like doing it this way, but I don't like doing it this way that much. I don't like it that much. To me, well, one, it feels out of order. It feels disjointed to me. But it also feels like we're saying we know better than you, Tolkien. And I don't know, man. I know we're not. I know that's not what anybody's saying, but to me, it sort of feels that way. It's just kind of weird, right? I'm a weird dude. Everybody knows that. I'll get over it, and I will keep reading Fellowship of the Rings because it is awesome. It's It's a great book. Yeah, that's it. More book talk at the end. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here now, this time for real. I hope everybody out there is doing well. Take care of yourselves. Take care of somebody else. And until next time, peace out.